You have downloaded the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast.
What to watch for.
He can attack the goal from all different angles, whether it's an alley dodge righty, a split to his left. He can invert. He can pass. They protect the paint. They pack it in as good as anyone in the nation. He fills the goal up. Ground balls will determine possessions and ultimately the winner of this game.
Sounds very simple, and it is.
The ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining this version of the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Quint Kestick, and we are headed to Championship Weekend. Semifinals Saturday, ESPN 2, 2:30 and 5 o'clock, and the National Championship game on Monday, Memorial Day, on ESPN. Lacrosse players don't dream of being at the beach on Memorial Day weekend. They dream of being in Philadelphia, and there's no better feeling than getting on that bus, seeing the police escort, pulling up, and you see the thousands and thousands, the sea of tailgaters, and they're there to watch you running onto the field with your teammates. It makes all the work you've done as a lacrosse student athlete from the first time you picked up a stick at that rec league practice to now. It makes it all worthwhile. It is a very, very special moment for these athletes. I played in two semifinal games, different circumstances. The key to winning a semifinal game, the key to winning the championship, is you got to focus on one play at a time. Teams that look ahead, teams that get out of their personalities, typically struggle. A lot of people already this week, who do you like? What do you think? Well, it's only Tuesday when we record this podcast. Got a lot of film to watch, got coaches to talk to this week, got players to talk to for this podcast, and then the practices on Friday, which are always very revealing. Quite honestly, if a team chucks the ball around the lot on Friday, it does not bode well for Saturday. And so I'll let things play out before we formally make our my predictions and my thoughts about the game. You just kind of slow play it and see how things develop. We'll be calling the game with Eamon McEnany and Paul Carcaterra. We'll be down on the field. We have a terrific compliment in our truck. John Kettering's our producer. Jimmy Platt has become the best director in the sport of lacrosse. John Vassallo, our executive producer, he's in charge of putting the great team together, the cameraman, full compliment, and we should have all the bells and whistles, and hopefully these games will just allow us to sit back and enjoy the sport of lacrosse.
Championship weekend is here as we welcome in Denver head coach Bill Tierney. Coach, I have three quick questions about your quarterfinal win over Carolina, and then we'll move forward. First of all, congratulations. Have you ever been involved in a game where you hit six pipes in a half?
Well, you know, I think those are the kind of things you want to forget if it did happen. So maybe, but certainly not in anything that important. It was just bizarre and actually served us with a more confidence than I thought it would, being down 6-0.
And you use the word bizarre because that empty net goal, as Carolina's pole is running upfield, and all of a sudden I see him winding up from 18, and then I realize that the goalie's not there. I mean, that was bizarre. I've done a lot of games, Coach. I've never seen anything like that.
Well, it was, you know, I don't know if you looked at our sideline afterwards, but I had to, you know, had to calm some assistant coaches down. You know, like Trevor felt awful. You know, we had talked a couple of minutes earlier about thinking about pulling Ryan, and he thought that we had the ball settled on offense, and so he yelled to Ryan to come out and told Jamie to get ready, and we were just waiting for the change, and then we had a turnover, and as we had a lot of them that first quarter. And, you know, it was very distressing. Honestly, it lasted with us for the next 50 minutes because we just kept – I know Trevor was worried because, you know, if we had lost by a goal, that certainly would have been a memorable one.
Oof, but, yeah.
So things turned out well, and we can kind of laugh at it now.
Yeah, last thing, Coach, as we look back, what was the most significant adjustment or change to the way you played defense in the second half, holding them only to two goals?
Well, you know, honestly, Quint, the most significant thing that happened all day was when I walked in the locker room at halftime and saw my sophomore, Wesley Berg, addressing the team. I just stepped back and listened to him say the things that I think were in my mind, that, hey, we can get five goals quickly. We're a good team. We hit a bunch of pipes. We're winning every faceoff. We're playing good defense other than in transition. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. I was just in awe of the situation. Really, all we decided to do was, as you saw all day, we couldn't get confused. You know, we just couldn't get confused with our guys, you know, staying on some picks, switching on others. And we just decided that, hey, if we get switched up, We got to count on our short sticks being able to cover their top attack. And then luckily it turned out that, you know, it worked. And Jamie stepped up and made some big-time saves as well.
As you now get set to, plan your week, Coach, what's the biggest challenge? You've been here a zillion times, it seems like. So what's the biggest challenge you face as a leader during this week?
Well, I think you got to be really careful of remembering that the guys you're coaching are only there for 4 years. Some this is their first year. We've got some pretty instrumental young guys playing. And so, you know, I can't look at it and say, well, I've been here before. It should be easy for you guys. I know, you know, God knows how many times Coach Desko and I have been opposite sidelines in Final Fours. But it's not any of that. I've got to just remember that, you know, for these guys, it's a great new opportunity. It's an amazing experience, and we've got to cherish every moment. I think the big thing is, you know, for our seniors, their first game was against Syracuse in the Carrier Dome, and we were down 7-0 in about 5 minutes. And so they've been through that. They know what the Syracuse onslaught can be like. And then secondly, that our juniors and seniors have been to a Final Four and know what it feels like to be on that stage. So we're hoping that the experience of both of those experiences will help us prepare to be a little bit, get off to a little better start than we did last week.
Are there any consistent themes, Coach, when you look at your, you know, your coaching history and things that can decide semifinal games?
You know, I think the one thing is to, I remember talking to Charlie Toomey last year, you know, the one thing that is consistent is that you should stay consistent. You know, you don't go changing a heck of a lot. Don't try to, you know, make it such a cool event and try to have so many activities for your guys and yet make sure that they're enjoying it as well, because it's a fleeting 3 or 4 days depending on how well you play, you know. And I think the idea is to make it as business-like as you can, but keep reminding the kids that how hard they work to achieve being there, so to cherish every moment.
When you look at a Syracuse team, Coach, I've seen them in person now, I think, 6 or 7 times. Motion offense, really sharing the ball well, good depth of contribution, and a defense that's really just gotten tighter and tighter during the course of the season. Anything in particular that stands out at this stage of the week?
Well, I'm just so impressed with the overall abilities of their guys. You know, you look at most teams, and you know this, most teams have 4, maybe 5 offensive guys you got to worry about. They go, you know, 2.5 midfields deep. They go 4 or 5 attackmen deep. And so it's not one of those things where you say, if we can stop this guy and this guy, we'd stop their team. The other side of this is, you know, in the history of Syracuse, you know, Final Four appearances and national championships, for a long time there, it was run and gun and shove it down your throat and, you know, kind of chase you all over defense. Now you've got, and all the credit to John and Desko and his staff, now you've got a team that's built around great defense, great goalie play, and opportunistic offense. They'll certainly get you in transition if you're not wary, but very patient and, as you said, very, very most unselfish group out there that I've seen.
Coach, last thing, what's it like for you when that police escort comes to the hotel, you got on the bus, you pull up in the parking lot, and you see all those people?
For me, Quint, it's amazing. We were talking about this the other day in Indianapolis, and they, by the way, the people in Indianapolis did an amazing job with that quarterfinal. For me, what I do is I always think back of those first times we went there, and you get through a Final Four, and whether you're victorious or not, one of the first things the kids always talk about is the police escort, you know, and how cool it is. And so now that I've been blessed to be a part of a couple of these things, what I do now when that thing starts up is I turn and I look back, because I always want to remember the faces of these young men who had no idea what was about to happen, and watching cars pull over and everything else and not know what's coming in behind them is pretty awe-inspiring. And it's just, and then you get to the place and you see the crowd. You know, Philadelphia is going to be wild. I think for the guys, those are, you know, they're going to forget some of the ground balls, forget some of the shots and saves and all that. but they'll never forget that feeling of pulling up to that stadium and seeing it packed and feeling the energy that comes out of it.
Coach, we'll let you get back to work. Appreciate your time. We'll see you in Philadelphia at practices on Friday. Good luck, and thanks again.
Thanks, Quinn.
Saturday, ESPN2. Duke and Cornell square off in the NCAA semifinals, Lincoln Financial Field. We welcome in Duke Blue Devil attackman Josh Dion, the pride of Avon Old Farms. We'll get to that in a second, Josh. I need to hear your take on the 9-9 goal with less than a second to go. Take me through that play. What's going on in your mind as you realize it's Duke ball on the sideline?
Right. Well, as soon as I saw Jordan, you know, chase down the ball, usually we meet eyes pretty quickly. And if you look on the film, you can kind of see my stick kind of flash to him just to know where, just so he knows where I would like to catch it. And then, you know, Coach Nowski does such a great job of preparing us to where the net is. I mean, if you look, I didn't really look at the net. It was basically muscle memory because we have shooting camp so often that, you know, Jordan, one of the best passers I've played with, just puts it right there, and my muscle memory did the work. But I was just so happy that, you know, to finish off the quarter, because that's what Coach Nowski really stressed, was finishing the game. I think that was one of our issues against UNC when, you know, when we gave up that late goal from, you know, I want to say from half, when they threw it, just dumped it in, and it went in on Turi. I think that was a deflator. So, you know, to keep the momentum going and stuff. I thought that was big.
I thought it was interesting on that play how you kind of left the crease area. You actually moved closer to Jordan, which cut down on your angle, but maybe made receiving the ball easier?
Right. I mean, we all know that Notre Dame is very disciplined. And if you, you know, you can hear, you know, Kemp yelling, you know, check hands, everyone's checking hands. So I just wanted to kind of put my body in front of his because, you know, I know that I'm pretty little, so if I kind of get tight and cover my wrist up, I can usually catch stuff, and then he won't be able to get a check on me. So I just wanted to kind of, you know, get my body within the, you know, in front of the man, and Jordan did the rest of the work for me.
Hey, what was the Indianapolis experience like from a player standpoint?
Oh, it was incredible. We were spoiled, you know, from the moment we got there. Coach Nowski did a great job with our travel plans. I thought we traveled excellent. I thought the hotel was great. You know, they had a nice little mall attached, so we got to keep our legs moving. But, you know, it was a business trip. You know, we were in and out. We were kind of reviewing it on our way home, and it seemed like we were there for only a couple hours, you know. But it was great. I thought our team handled it very well, and I thought the NCAA staff, you know, treated us great. I couldn't have been happier.
What's on the agenda for you this week down in Durham? Have you started summer session? Are you involved in that or no?
I'm not, actually. I was fortunate enough to have done my summer session last summer. So right now it's strictly wake up, shooting camp, you know, get some nice food in us, and then we have practice, and then more food, and we're just spending time with the boys every week. You know, it's just one more week with the boys, and I don't want to see these seniors go.
How many sticks you working right now?
right now I only have one. Coach Little Donowski doesn't like me changing sticks too much.
But how's your backup?
Oh, backup's flawless. It's obviously flawless, but he doesn't like when I bring it out to practice because he thinks that what I have going right now is okay.
I got in a situation in the national championship game when we actually won where my stick broke and I had to finish the game with my backup. So I'm big on having that backup ready.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think for the most part, our team always has the backups, but you know, we just go with what's working for us. I actually just strung Jordan Wolf a backup stick, you know, just in case things go down for him. But
are you the stick doctor?
I would think so for the offensive guys. I think, you know, our team likes a quicker release. If you're looking for the more, you know, the whip and the holds and the middies, Jake Trapuka is up there. And then Coach Sanofsky does the defense. I don't know how they like their big buckets and stuff like that.
Yeah, they go to the hardware store for that. What impact has Matt Donowski had on your game? Where has he been helpful for you?
Oh, geez. Honestly, words can't describe it right off the bat. But I think every day he brings kind of that energy and that youthfulness. And it's also a sense of pride. I mean, growing up, this is the era where I looked up to, you know, Matt Donowski, and then prior to that, you know, Mikey Powell. So to be able to have the opportunity to be on the same field and him coach me as, you know, the all-time leading point scorer, I just embrace it every day. And if he's telling me something, then it's got to be right because it worked for him. And I know that Case and Jordan feel the same way about that.
Josh, when you watch tape of Cornell's defense, what are things you look for as kind of an inside guy, a guy who's got to look at the way the defense operates? When you watch tape, what do you look for?
Right. Well, right off the bat, obviously, everyone knows our threats. We have very powerful Dodgers in Dave Lawson and Jake Trepuka, who's shifty, and Jordan, who's very explosive. So when I watch it, I kind of just see, you know, how the teams are going to slide, but not so much because everyone knows it's, you know, the comas or they're not sliding or whatever, but I like to see, you know, where they're coming to. So if Jordan's guy's coming right to his face, I try to find that lane so it's Jordan's right so I can see his eyes. I don't want him to have to throw across his body. I want to be able to follow my slide and be in the best position so they can see me. I just want to make my teammates' lives as easy as possible.
So that visual part is important.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Hey, last thing, Avon Old Farms, my college roommate, Dave Howland, great wrestler and lacrosse player from Avon, now lives in San Francisco. I'm going to have to mention him in the games now, knowing that if you make a big play and we can get Avon involved. What was most notable about your lacrosse experience at Avon?
Oh, my God, I can't. I think I've made some of my best friendships, besides obviously at Duke, but playing with players like Connor Mooney of UMass and obviously playing against Jack Runkel, you know, the other day against Loyola, and it's just, you know, seeing how my friends have also, you know, continued their growth and how it all began at Avon. You know, we're just so young and 14 years old growing up in the dorms, and just to see their growth as people and athletes, it's incredible. But the thing I remember was winning. I mean, we had a winning tradition. You know, that's what Avon was. That's why I went there. And without them and their mentalities, I don't think Duke would have been, a possibility.
Avon, so
thank them very much.
Well, you've continued that trend. Duke now making their seventh consecutive appearance championship weekend. Avon near the worldwide leader. You can catch the games on Saturday on ESPN2 and then Memorial Day. You need a win to get to Memorial Day. Josh, great talking to you. Continued success. Have fun this week. Enjoy it. You earned it. And we'll see you in Philly on practice Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
See you, Josh.
ESPNU Podcast welcomes in Terry Foy, managing editor of Inside Lacrosse. He's our short stick defensive midfielder, and I came up with a new nickname for you, Terry, the other day when I was on the bike machine at the gym. Timer on Terry. It's got a good ring to it.
Oh, for sure. Excellent ring to it. I like it. I think it implies that both I want to push the tempo, but I'm also diligently paying attention to make sure that we stay in bounds.
Okay. What was your biggest takeaways from last weekend? You were at the games down at College Park.
I think, Cornell's dominance was really impressive. I put a lot of their dominance at the feet of Ohio State playing the worst game they've played in about 6 weeks. I thought that their game plan, particularly defensively, to try to slow down Cornell was a little bit questionable, and I thought on offense it was one of those prototypical ball just didn't bounce our way type days. You know, so many passes that went off of sticks and out of bounds, etc. I believe in Cornell, and they've certainly made me into a believer after, kind of questioning them coming off their Princeton loss primarily because of what their deficiencies, kind of had been over the course of the season. But at the same time, I think that they are your Vegas favorite right now going forward, and they played that way in the quarterfinals. The second game, I was really impressed by Yale. I thought that defensively they were able to cover a lot, and that really struck out to me. I think what I took away from Syracuse the most is their ability to play multiple styles. I thought that in winning that game, they showed an ability to, score quickly early, get themselves out to a bit of a lead. And I thought that their struggles in the second and third quarter, the second quarter, I thought Napoli, played very well for, Natale played very well for Yale and Golden.
Not Northwest,
right?
Baltimore, Carroll County.
You got called out for that one. And then in the third quarter, I thought Yale did a nice job possessing the ball and then playing defense and getting stops and turnbacks when they needed to at their own defensive end. But ultimately, Syracuse, they were able to make plays down the stretch. I don't want to diminish the plays that they made based on it being a reputation type thing because they made those plays. The players on the field did that. But at the same time,
they usually do that, the players on the field.
Well, my point is that it wasn't the aura of Syracuse that scored those three goals, even though I think that had a lot to do with helping the players believe they were going to score those three goals.
I had a good save percentage against Aura. What are the biggest news stories you're covering this week? What can the fans look forward to on InsideLacrosse.com?
A lot coming out this week. It's, you know, probably the biggest week of the year on InsideLacrosse.com. Starts with the All-Americans. The USILA are releasing their teams per, you know, every day, a new team or a new award throughout the week. So make sure to check back for that. You know, as far as other news items throughout the week, we'll be able to, you know, check in on a number of different features. I'm putting together a story on Rob Pinnell and essentially how his legacy might be defined or fluctuated or changed at all based on winning last weekend and what he could potentially do with the Big Red this weekend. But then as you go around the remaining four teams at the D1 level, a lot of interesting storylines, you know, whether it be a guy like Brendan Fowler at Duke and what he's been able to do as a two-sport athlete and certainly helping to set the tone for that squad. And then as far as Denver goes, you know, Eric Law is a player who has emerged on the scene in a really tremendous way that I think a lot of people don't know exactly, you know, kind of what got him to this point. So hopefully, you know, we'll put together a story that'll shed some light on that. And then Syracuse, I mean, Casey was in coming back from Indianapolis. I don't know what he's got cooked up for that, but I'm sure it'll be a good look at what the Orange have going on this weekend.
Indianapolis was quite a scene. I just wish I had more time there. It was like we were there for about 18 hours, but really enjoyed it. The crowd was really young. A lot of kids. I think Kevin Corrigan deserves a lot of credit for the way he went barnstorming in the Midwest, giving clinics, coaching clinics, player clinics, and that was an experience that those kids will never forget.
Let me ask you a question about that. I made this point talking to a couple of people over the course of the weekend. It felt like a crowd that was so enthusiastic but wasn't as familiar with cheering for lacrosse. Is that? I mean, I'm from this area, so I hope I'm not sounding like an ignorant Mid-Atlanticer. Does
well,
that make sense?
No, I think they were neutral fans. You know, they didn't have they were not Notre Dame fans. They were not Duke fans. They were just lacrosse fans. So they're not going to be over the top excited on mediocre plays. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Well,
if I'm a parent of a Notre Dame student athlete, I'm cheering like every the good
right.
clear.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, a ground ball. Yeah. But if I'm a neutral observer, I'm obviously going to be more casual.
Well, the one thing I took away from it was like I was thinking about it specifically in that last sequence when Duke was goosing the ball and trying to come up with a ground ball in the last play of the game to kill the clock, and there wasn't a whole lot of noise, and I felt like it was because the fans were waiting to see who was going to come up with the ball. If that had been a College Park or a Navy quarterfinal, I thought it would have been crazy
yeah,
at that
yeah.
point.
Give me the latest on the Hopkins realignment and the conference news.
Well, so they announced on Friday that they're going to be pursuing a conference affiliation. That being said, you know, AD Tom Calder and Dave Petromala on their conference call post announcing that said that it's not a foregone conclusion that they will join a conference. If they don't find a fit that they like, then, you know, they're not going to push it simply for the sake of joining a conference. You know, they weren't willing to talk at this time about, you know, specifics in terms of the conferences that they're considering. I've done some reporting on that throughout the course of the spring. I still maintain that the Big Ten is an early leader. Got an opportunity over the course of the weekend to talk to a few parties on the Big Ten side, and I think that fit makes sense. I understand all the skepticism among fans because of the way it'll break precedent insofar as the Big Ten's relationship with affiliate and associate members is concerned. That being said, I think that this is something that the teams and the programs that have made investment in the Big Ten, in
Michigan,
Big Ten lacrosse,
Dave
Michigan,
Brandon,
Penn State, and Ohio State have yeah. all made significant investments in the sport. They want to see Big Ten lacrosse, and Johns Hopkins could make that happen.
Reciprocated from the conference office. If the ECAC blows up, where does Denver end up?
I think Denver and Fairfield are both very good options to end up in the Big East, and I think that one of the things that we'll see happen quickly after the season ends, depending on the dominoes that fall, is that move, particularly if they find a way to do it in conjunction. I think Denver and Fairfield are both interested in making the move together. The Big East is interested in having one or the other of them, not both. And with Loyola obviously leaving for the Patriot League, it'll leave it'll leave the ECAC in a very precarious situation. One news item from last night that doesn't have a ton of legs yet, the America East considering a move in all sports to – I'm sorry, Albany considering a move in all sports to the CAA. It would be a significant kind of upheaval in terms of that conference where it seems like the Great Danes are pretty well positioned to win that league for the next 2 years.
Give me an attendance number, Saturday semifinals.
Well, middle of last week, I got a number from the previous Friday, and it was just under 20,000 pre-sale. I would expect that number, based on the fact that we know who's in the Final Four now, has taken a bump. I wouldn't be surprised if we're in the 23,000-24,000 area. Wouldn't be surprised if they get to a shade under 30,000 going into the weekend. Then it kind of depends on the weather and walk-up. I'm going to predict we get close to 39 for semifinals.
What should fans know about the Division III championship?
It's going to be awesome. There's no question. Hopefully everybody has seen RIT's fake flip overtime game-winning goal at this point to beat Cortland in a very dramatic fashion. And, you know, if you haven't gotten an opportunity to see Stevenson play, they kind of have a swagger like Lehigh, and just an you cannot make a comparison in terms of how carefree those players are with the ball to any team you've seen in Division I. They average 70 shots a game. They put about 20 of them on net. Some games 17 go in. Some games 5 go in. No, it's pretty uncommon.
Sounds like
that
fun.
It is a wild up and down type of style.
Last thing, any news in regard to new programs next year? Furman, Boston U, Monmouth.
Gotten an opportunity to catch up with a few coaches, Richmond in that mix as well, about their, you know, kind of the status of things as they progress forward. And, you know, most of them have their recruiting classes in place. For example, Furman bringing in a very large class. They could have a roster upwards of almost 50 players at this time. Well, maybe not at this time next year, but going into next season. Different approaches at different programs. Richmond going to have a smaller group. They're going to have upperclassmen based on their club team tryouts. BU kind of a mixture of the two in terms of the types of recruits they're bringing in. They've all been very successful on the trail. But this is a time of year when they can look at transfers, both junior college transfers and Division I, Division II transfers, to come in and make an impact.
And lastly, and most importantly, our wager early in the year, High Point, 3 wins was the under-over. I took the under, you took the over. It's a push. How are we settling things out here?
Well, I think that maybe one of the solutions was that you were going to wear a BU, because the loser was going to wear the other team's shirt.
I don't have a BU or a High Point T-shirt.
Yeah, we might need to get on the horn overnight it, because the Final Four practices are coming up fast and furious.
Terry Foy, Inside Lacrosse. You can follow him on Twitter. You can also read all his work at InsideLacrosse.com. That's your source for information as we head towards Philadelphia. Appreciate your time this morning, Terry.
Thanks a lot, Quint. Timer off.
Cornell and Duke on Saturday, NCAA quarterfinals. We welcome in Cornell long stick defensive midfielder Thomas Keith, senior out of Syosset. Ground ball machine this year, cause turnover machine. Thomas, how would you best describe the season that you've put together?
Oh, it's been a magical season for me, myself, and as well as the team. It's been everything I could want out of my senior year.
What's changed for this group in the playoffs? You know, you guys with the 3-1 goal losses during the regular season, you know, including the latest to Princeton in the Ivy League championship semifinals. What has kind of put this team over the edge?
I think it's just our tight knit senior group and everybody buying into having this not be our last week of lacrosse. That's been our motto going forward. So when we walked into Maryland, we knew it wasn't our last week of lacrosse, and against Ohio State, we had that same type of motto going in, and that's what we're gonna go heading into the weekend.
Trail checks, knockdowns, running out shots, and getting ground balls in the defensive end. Those are plays that it seems like this big red defense makes all the time. What's the mindset behind the way you guys play D?
We just all work together, and we're just one unit, and we all just try and make plays, and just we have such a great offense that. Our motto is trying to get the ball to the offense, so we just do all we can to make that happen and try to keep the ball in the net.
What was it like on Sunday to watch that Duke against Notre Dame game?
Oh, it was great. It was a great experience knowing that we were in and we were going to play the winners. So we were all met up around the seniors' house, and we all had a little team experience watching the game, picking up on some habits of both teams, and it was a great game, so it was great to see.
Are you a guy who watches a lot of clips of midfield Dodgers?
Oh, yeah. I'm watching film every day. I've been watching film ever since Sunday. So it's getting to the point where I've watched so much film, I kind of feel like I've watched the whole season so far.
So you specifically request, do you watch all their offensive possessions in their entirety wide, or do you prefer some of the dodging clips?
We have a system here where we could pinpoint specific players and specific dodges, so I could focus on the middies more, but I do like to watch their offensive sets, so if I ever get mixed up with an attackman or if just they throw different stuff at them, I know what's coming.
How much time will you spend in the film room looking at face-offs?
Oh, that's something I take joy in. I really like watching faceoffs, especially with this unit that we're about to approach. And me, Doug Soriero, Jason Noble, Tom Trettis, Lindy, the other guys on the wings, we all like to sit back, and we're going to be foul tested this weekend with these guys coming in. They have such a great unit, but we'll be watching film and we'll be ready.
Without giving me specifics, from a statting standpoint, do you guys, how specific are you in terms of an opponent facing off, you know, going forward, or whether he clamps back to his left or right? How much of that data do you guys know?
We game plan, and we also have a scouting report, so we know quite a bit, but we just look at it as their unit versus our unit, our three face-off unit against them. So, yeah, they have an individual at the X, but it's also about what we could do as a team up there.
Thomas, what's it going to be like for this Cornell team to get in the bus and pull up Philadelphia with all the tailgaters and you know, to be back in championship weekend?
Oh, it's going to be great. I mean, if you've seen Cornell games, we travel pretty extensively with our alumni base. So it's going to just be a great experience, and I'm just pleased that I could share it with the rest of the team.
Where were you last time Cornell when they played the national championship game in 09?
Oh, I was receiving a lot of text messages from my friends at home watching the game with my family, and just I remember that experience. I remember how I felt about the game, and I look forward to redeeming ourselves.
What's a key for me to point to if this Cornell defense is playing well? What will I notice on Saturday?
We play our best when we're just moving our feet, when we're not standing still, when we're all helping them out, and we're communicating well. We've been communicating so well over the past couple games that it's been nice that we've seen that our defense has taken the next step forward.
Thomas, you got a degree? You're going to graduate?
I don't know how, but I'm graduating.
Congratulations. What's your degree in?
It's Applied Economics and Management, but that's just the Cornell way of saying business.
Graduation is this weekend, so you will not be part of that?
We will not be part of it. That's every Cornell player's dream.
Will you have a separate ceremony?
Yes, we will. We'll have a separate informal ceremony without the rest of the other senior class.
What was your favorite class in your history at Cornell?
I mean, I've grown to be close with all the graduates, but I mean, what we've taken away from the seniors when we were freshmen going into this weekend, I think will be nice for us, because they've led such a great class and they led their team into the Final Four, and that was the only experience that I've gotten with the Final Four, so it was great that they paved the way, and we're looking to just build on that.
Syosset's finest, Thomas Keith, wears number 12, and you'll see him a long stick midfielder this weekend, Cornell and Duke. Thomas, good luck this week. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the week, and enjoy your preparation.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you.
Saturday games on ESPN2. Monday Championship Memorial Day on ESPN. I'll be joined by Eamon McEnany and Paul Carcaterra. We welcome in Paul right now. Paul, have you recovered from the quarterfinals?
Yeah, I have. I mean, a lot of adrenaline after the first game with Ohio State and Cornell. Bit of a snoozer just because the Big Red just came out like gangbusters and took a big lead on Ohio State. But those last three games were incredible. Certainly the adrenaline kicked in, but when I got home Sunday night around midnight, yeah, I hit it pretty hard, and still hurting a little bit from a long weekend.
Syracuse, Denver. Bill Tierney, a guest on this podcast, I just spoke to Kevin Rice, whose improvement from his freshman to sophomore year is just off the charts. What's your gut in terms of the status of Steve Ianzito, really a key part of that Syracuse defense?
You know, I watched Ianzito walk off to the locker room, and I thought it was a little bit more severe than I initially anticipated. I had a chance actually to speak to their team physician, Irving Raphael, and he thinks it was a pretty bad sprain, but with kids these days and their ability to recover, he thinks that Ianzito might make a run at this. But his play and his presence out there is significant for Syracuse, just because he's a physical guy, he can handle the ball, just a confidence in between the lines that when he's not on the field, you almost sense it. You know, you feel good if you're a Syracuse fan when Steven Ianzito is clearing from defense to offense with all of his offensive experience and his footwork and his ability to shut down midfielders with a short stick is critical for them.
Syracuse got off to a good start against Yale, then they kind of hit a wall where they didn't score a goal for 43 minutes and 40 seconds. Got things back together like they've done so many times this year. You know, the trailing late, that they've been a really good fourth quarter team when the money's on the line. Kevin Rice, Luke Cometti from Marasco, and then Donahue from Marasco. What was your take about their offense and the struggles they may have had in the quarterfinals?
You know, I think you got to give a lot of credit to the Yale defense as a unit. Not only their ability to, you know, lock down guys, but getting the ball off the floor and just giving Yale a lot of extra possessions. I feel like Syracuse never was able to get into a flow on that end of the field and until the end of the ball game. One thing that I would take away, though, when I was in the Syracuse huddle, you mentioned guys like Donahue, guys like Rice, Schoonmaker, all these players really that don't have significant big-time playoff experience. I mean, for all intents and purposes, no one on that team does. They've never been to a Final Four, any of those guys. I was really impressed with how poised they were in the huddles. Guys like Kevin Rice, too, he's asking Desco questions. He's telling Desco what he sees out there. I mean, I look back to my sophomore year and I'm staring up at the scoreboard and we're down by two goals with 5 minutes left in the ball game. I'm just saying, you know, give the ball to Casey Powell and hopefully he ends the game. But, you know, that wasn't the case with these guys. There's a lot of lacrosse IQ on that offense.
Denver's defense, second half, they held North Carolina to two goals. How good are they? Was that a mirage, or is this group actually pretty capable now?
You know, I think anytime Bill Tierney rolls out a defense, they're capable just because he's such a great coach. I mean, he kind of changed the game of lacrosse from a defensive standpoint his early years in the late 80s, early 90s in Princeton. And it's not like he forgot how to coach and teach defense. I'll say this, though. I think the tempo of the game and the way that things changed from a face-off standpoint, those extra possessions, North Carolina's defense getting tired. I don't think the Denver defense was asked to play a ton of 6-on-6 defense in that second half. I mean, how many times did you see Marcus Holman in the second half really making his presence felt in the 6-on-6 set? I didn't see a lot of it. So as much as Denver probably has that quality defense, I don't think Sunday was a good way to judge how good that defense really is, because I think Syracuse, from a team standpoint, they don't have the gangbusters like North Carolina has from a dodging standpoint. Maybe Carolina's a more skilled offense, but I think Syracuse will probably test the Denver defense more because of their ability to move without the ball and all those interchangeable parts. I think they pose a lot more threats than maybe Carolina did in that second half. I mean, when you watch that game, do you feel like Carolina ever had chance to get into a flow in that second half offensively?
No, I thought they got away from their bread and butter. I didn't see a bitter Sankey and Holman get enough touches. I thought they deferred too much to their middies to attack the shorties instead of staying with their best players.
Great.
Let's turn our attention to Cornell. Cornell Duke. The big question mark is can Duke, can anyone guard Rob Pennell? If you're Duke defensive coordinator, given your personnel and your struggles at times this season, what do you think is going to be their best avenue to slowing down Rob Pennell and Steve Mock?
Well, slowing down is the key thing because, you know, as cliche as it sounds, it's like, you know, you can't stop them, you only hope to contain them. That's been in sports for centuries. But the fact of the matter is you really can't stop Rob Pennell. I just feel when you throw junk defenses at him and other guys get involved and you lose your identity for 5 days, I think you chop your own head off defensively, to be quite honest. I mean, these teams like Duke have been playing all season long. If you throw a gimmick for 1 week at Rob Pennell, I think you get away from who you are. And then you have five other guys on the field running around like chickens with a head cut off. So I feel if you're Duke, guard the kid straight up. And we've talked about this, too. I think you and I had the conversation Sunday on the way to the airport. I would rather have Rob Pennell score 6 goals on me than have him go 3-3. And although it's the same outcome in terms of points, I feel like when he gets other players involved, they start getting confident. And then this offense just manifests, and it becomes really difficult to stop. So I think if you're Duke, you have to go in with the mindset, let's put whoever our best matchup is on this guy, and honestly, don't slide early to him. And it's going to be really hard in the second quarter if he has three goals on isolation not to change your mindset. But then if you start changing and he's got three goals in his pocket and now he starts feeding Steve Mock and now he starts feeding Connor Bucic, this thing will multiply like gremlins from an offensive standpoint. So I really think you have to just say, who's our best matchup? Let's guard this kid and let's see where the chips fall.
Death from a thousand wounds. Mock's a guy that scares me as an ex-goalie because he's always catching the ball off ball movement. He's shooting it from me to this headset I'm wearing. Goalies, he either misses the goal or it's a goal. Goalies don't make stops on Steve Mock. He's the guy, as you said, I'd rather take my chances with some Pinnell, ISO, wing, you know, off of question marks, limited angle shots than Steve Mock from dead center because I haven't seen a goalie yet this year who can even remotely come close to stopping him.
No, and you look at that Syracuse game, it was interesting too because they really, really adopted that. You remember in the first quarter, we were watching Rob Pinnell, and we were saying, oh, my God, this kid's going to have 10 and 10.
Yeah, but they took Mock, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As McGill kind of got a little bit more comfortable with that matchup, did Pinnell beat him a couple times? Yeah. But the young kid from Syracuse guarded Steve Mock and face-guarded him, Canadian style. The kid's a lacrosse player. He didn't do anything that game. He had, like, one or two goals in the first half, but they never slipped from him. If you slide from Steve Mock, I mean, are you serious? Like you said, the kid shoots like 42%, 43%. He's going to score on any goalie.
Last thing, Cornell, I think they're going to be tested at the defensive midfield position. Duke's midfielders last week, David Lawson, quite a display. Jake Trepuka has huge assists at the midfield position. He's number two right now behind JoJo Marasco, I believe. He may have passed Schreiber. I got to go check that, but he's way up the list. They got Offit. They got Miles, the big freshman, Miles Jones. They got Deemer Klass. These are some hardcore midfielders. Can Cornell's defensive midfield stay with these guys?
You know, I think the biggest question, I don't know if you've checked yet, what's the weather Saturday?
I don't know. I'm focused on today. You're worried about Cornell's depth?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think if it's 85 degrees and hot and humid, that's a huge, huge favor from a depth standpoint over to Duke. You just mentioned all those guys. They're really deep at the midfield. The bottom line is this. Bucic, Van Burgundian, English, you'd rule that first midfield out against anyone. But you get into that second midfield, and I know they're young guys, and we talked about their lacrosse IQ and their ex-attackmen. Are these the guys with the new rules that could run both ends of the field? They look like attackmen playing midfield, to be honest with you. And
yeah.
I think if it comes into play where this is a track meet and it's hot out, that's a huge, huge push towards Duke. I think if it's a game like last weekend and, you know, it's in the 60s and 70s and Cornell can rest their legs. And the thing that questions me though is if this even remotely is a warm day, and say Cornell does squeak it out, I think people are so high on Cornell, and they should be because of what they've done in consecutive weeks. But those are 6-7 days rest. Can this team win two games in 3 days? That's the biggest question.
Yeah,
out of this group, they have the least amount of.
That's exactly right. I was thinking about that last night because Denver's been there. They've played two games in a weekend. Duke's done it many times this year. Syracuse did it in the Big East tournament. But Cornell hasn't put themselves in a position where they've had to do it this year. They lost in that Big East tournament.
Yeah. They lost to Princeton up in Ithaca, so they never were tested and given the opportunity to play Yale. But, you know, how much can you ask of Bucic and Van Burgundy? And I feel like English substitutes, I never see that kid on defense. He's the one guy I think they always try to get off the field. But if you catch Van Burgundy and Bucic and you force that second midfield, nice players with Cook and Hogan, but, I mean, are they the type of guys that are going to score a few goals in critical moments in the second half? I haven't seen it yet, so maybe they'll prove me wrong.
Clark, last thing, your favorite semifinal moment as a player?
Wow. It would have to be my sophomore year when we played Virginia. Virginia beat us up pretty good in the Dome as a sophomore in the regular season, and we had a rematch And the reason being is because it kind of went full circle. My freshman year, you probably remember when Michael Watson scored the game winner against us. We were the number one seed. That's really when Virginia took their step to the next level under Don Starcher. We were up 6 goals, I think, in the fourth quarter, or 5 goals. They came roaring back, beat us in overtime, Michael Watson. The next regular season, they whooped us. So, like, it was a changing of the guard. We got a rematch with them in the semifinals as a sophomore and beat them up pretty good. Held that attack in check. And, you know, you probably remember the name Nick Licomelli. That was his coming out party. He had a huge weekend for us. And it came full circle. When Roy Colby shot one between his legs and missed and laughed, he knew the game was in hand in the fourth quarter because we beat him up pretty good. But that was a great Virginia team. And I'll never forget one other thing. As a team, Hopkins was undefeated that year. Terry Reardon, Brian Pecola, Dave Marr at attack. This team was absolutely loaded. They were the number one seed. We came on the Bird Stadium kind of driveway area, and we could see the scoreboard, and we saw Maryland up on Hopkins, huge. And without playing, it was like there was a sense on the bus that we're going to win this national championship, that everything was lined up for us because people were scared of Hopkins that year. I mean, Reardon and Pecola are the two most prolific scorers in the school's history. They're undefeated, and Dougherty had that incredible performance, the Maryland goalie, against that offense, and they looked Hopkins, and we're rolling up on the bus. We see the scoreboard. It was almost like, you know, destiny, this is our weekend.
That was my first national championship weekend, Clark, for ESPN. I'll never forget it. Hopkins, Tony Seaman on Friday, press conference. How do you spell pressure? H-O-P-K-I-N-S. A couple minutes later, Roy Simmons Jr. comes up. This is where we want to be. This is where we belong, very much in personality. You could see right away that one team was going to play well and the other may struggle. Paul, thanks. We'll talk to you later this week when we talk to our coaches on Wednesday, and then obviously the practices on Friday. Maybe we'll get the ball out there. Maybe bring a tennis ball and two sticks. You can whip some past my head.
I'd love to do that. I owe you a couple, don't I?
Yeah. I'll see you, Clark. Thanks.
Yeah.
Championship weekend from Philadelphia. Saturday's games on ESPN2 as we welcome in Kevin Rice, attackman, Syracuse University, Skinny Atlas, New York. Kevin scored a critical goal last week in the quarterfinal win against Yale. Take me back. You guys are down 6-4. Offense had been sputtering. What did you see on that play?
Well, Yale's defense was pretty quick to slide all game, and they went to a full rotation, and so I ended up with a short stick, and they hadn't really gotten set back with their slide man on the crease, so I knew I had time to dodge right away and that the slide probably wouldn't come.
And you got the shorty, and you stuck that ball in the corner, and next thing you know, you guys got it rolling.
Yeah, you know, it was a pretty frustrating day for our offense overall. We started off pretty fast, and, you know, we got those first four in the first quarter, and it seemed like we were rolling from there. But, you know, I give the defense credit. They buckled down, and the goalie made some key saves, and, you know, our defense did a great job of keeping us in it.
Kevin, how do you best describe your season? You know, the improvements you have made have just been off the charts now as a sophomore from your freshman year. How do you best describe what you've been able to do?
You know, I give credit a lot for my own play to, you know, the way our team and our offense plays as a whole. You know, we're an unselfish group, and anytime your best offensive player is as unselfish as JoJo is, you know, it helps everybody else get better. And I think, you know, for guys like Dylan and I, you know, it's just been a playing time thing. You know, now that we're getting more experience, you know, we're stepping up our game.
Kevin, your dad was a high school basketball coach?
Yeah, and lacrosse.
Did you play hoops?
Yeah, I played basketball and soccer.
I know you're a three sport guy. I talk about three sport guys. I think there's a big room for improvement at the college level, and you've been in so many competitions. I think there's an advantage there. How do you see that being beneficial?
Yeah, I think just, you know, being in big games regardless of the sport always helps you prepare and helps you get ready for the next level. You know, you don't ever get too rattled because you've been in tight game situations regardless of the sport, and the pressures are usually pretty much the same, so it definitely helps you prepare.
I've been really impressed with the motion offense you guys are running. You know, different sets, but everybody seems to be on the same page. Great off-ball movement. Guys are sharing the ball. It's really fun to watch. What's it been like to be a part of that?
It's been nice. You know, We move before the Dodger starts, which is, you know, different from a lot of teams who their off-ball guys sort of react to what the Dodger does, but our off-ball guys kind of dictate where the Dodger goes, and I think that's a little different, and I think it's been throwing teams off, and, you know, it does come back to, you know, being unselfish and everybody being on the same page really has helped us.
I hate to go back to last year, but that's a massive contrast to the way you guys played offense last year.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I think the first day we came in the fall, Coach Donahue, you know, talked to the guys that would be playing a lot on offense this year and said it was going to be different and it would have to be better. And, you know, we've been working towards that all year because no one wanted another season like last year.
Well, what's your focus now as you set your sights on Denver? You got a week to prepare, no school. First of all, how will you fill your free time?
You know, we've been watching a lot of film and, you know, practice in the afternoons, and everybody's staying focused. You know, got a couple lifts in this week, and everybody's just really excited to get back to championship weekend.
What do some of the some of the alums and guys around the programs say it's going to be like?
You know, they're all really excited for us, but you know, they say just to keep focused, and you know, it's a business trip. You know, all the other stuff is fun, but you're there to win two lacrosse games.
What did you notice about Denver's defense in that second half? I'm sure you guys were watching the game live on Sunday as they start making that comeback against North Carolina. Do you specifically watch personnel? Do you watch schemes? How do you watch a game like that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I know we've watched the game twice. You know, you watch it the first time sort of as a fan, and then once we knew we were playing Denver, you go back and you watch it again. You pay more attention to North Carolina's offensive sets and the way Denver was handling their slides and their recoveries, and, you know, a couple things jump out. They like to switch all their picks, so, you know, we can change our matchups if we need to. You know, it was impressive the way their defense, in the second half, they were playing 6-on-6 defense, you know, and they stopped North Carolina's transition. They were really very good on defense.
Yeah, no, that's the best I've seen them play this year defensively in that second half. There were times earlier this year where they've struggled. They've switched from a man to a zone. It looks like you're right about that. They're switching. They seem to be willing to deal with some matchups that didn't look as favorable. What's important for the Syracuse offense? You guys, just in general.
Yeah, I think we just need to keep, you know, playing the way we've been playing and running our offense. You know, we can adjust our offense a little bit to what the other team's doing. And, you know, we're expecting to see a lot of different types of defenses, you know, with some zones and maybe some junk Ds and some man-to-man.
Kevin, appreciate your time. Enjoy the week and enjoy the moment when you guys take the field. I'll see you Friday at practice.
All right, thanks, man.
Hope you enjoyed this version of the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast. Hope to see you in championship weekend in Philadelphia. We'll be there Friday for practices. Obviously, the game Saturday, Sunday's a prep day, and then the national title game on Memorial Day. You can follow me on Twitter all weekend long. You can follow InsideLacrosse.com as well. You'll get updates. You'll get practice reports. You'll get feature stories. You'll get game recaps. You'll get interviews. You'll get some video later on as well. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. If you can't get to Philly, it's ESPN2 on Saturday and ESPN on Memorial Day.
Thanks for downloading the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast. For more great shows, be sure to check out the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com.